Good morning. Welcome to the Australian Early Finance Briefing for Saturday, the 8th of August 2020. My name's Nick Hurley here under curfew in Melbourne. Today we're going to start with the RBA statement that was made by the Assistant Governor Lucy Ellis. I did mention yesterday that probably a lot of what they would be forecasting wouldn't be particularly useful just based around how much is actually changing with the Victorian economy largely going into hibernation. However, they wisely have put forward sort of three different scenarios. All are more oriented around the downside, which is consistent with a lot of what they've been saying about, you know, their function is to provide, you know, for the worst case scenario and sort of hope for the best. So their baseline forecast is of a slower than forecast economic rebound, where unemployment hits 10% by December and then falls slowly to 7% by the end of 2022. Now, there's a plausible downside, so this is the second one, that Australia faces further outbreaks and heightened restrictions in particular regions of the country, and the world experiences a widespread resurgence of infections, resulting in the unemployment rate remaining close to 10% throughout all of next year. Then in their downside scenario, that sort of suppression continues and unemployment falls to just 9% by the end of 2022. In all their scenarios, they've emphasised that the core inflation stays below the 2-3% target band, which is probably another sign that they're very interested in measures that have the potential to stimulate the economy but may have inflationary impacts. They were also very pessimistic about the international border reopening. Their models, they've actually extended the delay by 6 months to the middle of 2021, which is very similar to Alan Joyce's, the CEO of Qantas's, own sort of forecast based on the IATA, which also has, you know, international travel not really starting up till then. Now, the AMP chief economist has mentioned that with the second wave of coronavirus cases threatening the recovery, it's likely that the RBA will ease further in the months ahead, having all but ruled out negative interest rates, foreign exchange intervention, and direct monetary financing of government spending. Further easing is likely to take the form of a rate cut, which a number of other people have mentioned, to say 0.1%, and more importantly, more aggressive quantitative easing. Obviously, with rates already at 0.25%, another 0.15% is not going to have a big impact, particularly with the profound economic disruptions occurring here in Victoria. The bond buying, though, could have a really positive impact, where, you know, they expand the monthly sort of bond purchasing program. Now, this is interesting in that it is extremely pessimistic, and we're seeing globally a lot of talk about this vaccine, a lot of positive news flow, whereas, yeah, the RBA is looking at it as though there's not really going to be anything for a very long time and, you know, profound disruptions going forward. Even here in Australia, which seems to be sort of somewhat lagging the conversations around securing vaccine supplies, and, you know, we have not had a single stage three trial done here. We've had them done in the UK, South Africa, Brazil, and the US. Where is Australia's phase three trial? None yet. Now, the acting chief medical officer Paul Kelly said in his briefing to the National Cabinet yesterday afternoon or during the day that there was reason for strong optimism, with more than 100 vaccine options being investigated and some are already in clinical trials, a process which can take years but was happening in months, even weeks. I'm much more hopeful than I was even a few weeks ago in relation to the vaccine, he says. In the last couple of weeks, there have been published papers, not just speculation and, you know, market announcements, i.e. the Moderna announcement by certain companies, but actual published papers demonstrating that there are several different types of vaccines that are now absolutely developed and appear to be effective, at least in terms of making antibodies against this virus. So it sounds like finally the tide is turning, even in the Australian federal government, that they're really starting to take these vaccines seriously. It does continue to bring into question, do we have manufacturing capacity? Where are these agreements? Are we going to import directly? Are there licensing agreements? You know, there's already large-scale mass production of the Oxford vaccine underway by AstraZeneca, but not here in Australia, and certainly there's no guarantee of any of that for Australia at this point. They've also gone into agreement with manufacturers in India. Their largest Indian serum laboratories are making the world's largest immunization manufacturers there. They've signed an agreement, and they've also signed an agreement with a vaccine manufacturer in China. So there's lots going on. I'm still yet to see anything about Australia's sort of international involvement in these. Obviously, we have our own vaccines here, but none of them are at stage three yet. Now, The Economist magazine brings up an interesting point that the collective promises of these new vaccines is actually now at 4 billion. So across all the different vaccine manufacturers, they're all saying they're going to make 4 billion doses. Some obviously are not, probably won't even succeed, and you know, it's sort of a given that that's the case. But The Economist mentions that many experts think supply will also be constrained by global shortages of things such as vials and syringes. And they expect a more realistic estimate of global supply by the end of next year to be just at 2 billion. So it'd be interesting to see, you know, particularly with the Chinese manufacturing sort of machine, I'm sure there'd be a lot of potential additional syringe manufacturing capacity if that needs to be done. They also mentioned that one way to mitigate this issue would be for governments to spend more. Some economists argue that governments could do more to hurry along vaccine manufacturing distribution, similar to the Operation Warp Speed that the Trump administration has sort of been implementing in the US. So some researchers estimate that the world needs to invest about $100 billion in these sort of warp speed programs to make sufficient quantities, which is about a tenfold increase than what has been spent to date. But they make the really pertinent point, the current estimates of output lost due to this horrible virus globally is about $7 trillion. So $100 billion really is nothing compared to the cost of this virus continuing on in society. Now, we mentioned earlier in the week that ESG focused funds have been a huge area of growth in the managed funds market globally, particularly in Europe. In Europe last year, there was 360 new ESG-focused funds launched by asset managers, and the asset growth in that sort of sub-market is 120 billion euro in 2019, which was, you know, 2.5 times the inflows the preceding year. Now, back here in Australia, we've had Sydney-based fund manager Perpetual purchase a US-based ESG manager called Trillium. And as a result, they're now launching two here in Australia that come under the Trillium brand. So it's the Trillium ESG Global Equity Fund and the Trillium Global Sustainable Opportunities Fund. They aim to invest in companies contributing to three sustainability themes through their core business: climate solutions, economic empowerment, and healthy living. These funds have, you know, outperformed the benchmark. The benchmark is the S&P 1500, so it's a very sort of broad benchmark to compete against. Certainly not a sort of ESG centric benchmark by any means. Now, the funds will largely mirror the Trillium's US funds in terms of the investment teams and fees. It'll be managed mostly out of the US, but the geographic sort of focus here will be a bit more global than the US, which is very US-centric. Okay, moving to the markets now. The US has opened up largely flat. The S&P is down about 2 basis points, NASDAQ down about 7. There's sort of two counteracting things going on there in the US. We've got the non-farm payrolls that have just come out. They're much better than expected. They've come in at 1.8 million, and unemployment at 10.2%. That's much better than forecasts, which were 1.5 million and 10.6% unemployment. But even with that, there's still a lot of people in America out of work. They have added 9.3 million jobs, or people gone back to their old jobs in the last 3 months, but there's still 13 million less working than there were in February. Now, more negative things to come out of the US. Donald Trump's at it again with his sort of measures against China. He's now threatening to ban the very popular instant messaging app WeChat, which is owned by Tencent. They have the Tencent stock price on the China market has dropped, and there's also talk that Trump will take more punitive measures against Hong Kong. That's sent the markets sort of globally into a largely risk-off move. The US dollar's rallied a lot. That's caused gold to fall and the Chinese currency to fall. And the Australian dollar is down about 0.88%. And that's the last early finance briefing for this week. Have a great weekend. See you next week.
This podcast is for investment professionals only and should not be relied upon by private investors. The podcast is provided for informational purposes only and does not constitute financial advice. The values of investments can go up or down, so you may get back less than you initially invest.